Hi, this boy from Pennsylvania, 32 years old, disease-free, unmarried house, looking for a lady who's very sexual, likes to get talked dirty when having sex, loves sex, and is very open-minded. If that's you, call me.
To replay this
disease-free, we're talking on the phone. Hi. I'm Leah Leronowitz, and this is I Am Deep Throat Podcast, which is all about my life as a phone sex operator. This podcast is exceptionally raunchy and dirty and filthy. It is not recommended for anyone under the age of 18. With all that out of the way.
For the next meeting, press...
Good afternoon. This is Elliot. I'm an older gentleman on the East Coast. We're very, very steamy, and I'm stuck inside. Just hoping for some company on this hot afternoon. I love young girls who are looking for their daddies. I like bored housewives who are looking to cheat. But mostly I just love adventurous conversation. If you'd like to speak with me, please send me a message. Thanks.
Greetings, Mom.
E.T. would be so disappointed to find out that Elliot has become such a pervert. Sad. And welcome. Let's dive in.
At that moment of orgasm, for lack of a better word, the two souls actually merge and touch, albeit for a brief instant. And it's humbling. And yet it's so intense, it's rejuvenating. It was just, I was trying at that time to be true to myself and the loved ones in my life. And sometimes juggling those things is no small task.
It was a very difficult situation. It's like, fine, you want to be with her, then be with her. So I would get resentful and remove myself out of the, you know, the triangle.
Hey, come on, get out of the stickers. Come on.
Because of the sexual tension and the secrecy, I wanted him to tell me. And so he started to pour all this out of the pain that he had gone through. And, you know, it became very honest. He told me about all the relationships. He really, for the first time, expressed how deeply he felt and how much his love was for horses.
Michael and Laurie agreed to bring back Michael's mares into their relationship.
And welcome back to I'm Deep Throat Podcast with me, your host, Leah Leronowitz. This is episode 12, The Dirty Dozen. Wow, exciting. So, back in the day, and by back in the day I mean approximately 2005. Yes, 2005. I had a subscription to Rolling Stone magazine. This was when Rolling Stone magazine, it was kind of in its last hurrah of awesomeness before it became whatever it is now, which is inert, I guess. It used to really matter. Now it's very inert. And they usually only end up sort of in the news because they've fucked up badly. Because they put, you know, a Boston bomber on the cover for some reason, like he's a rock star. Or they've published a report about a gang rape on campus that turns out never to have happened. I mean, that was very, very interesting, but whoa, doggy, what a fuck up. Anyway, so at the time, in 2005, Rolling Stone was still hot, and I read it religiously at that point, as well as a lot of other rags. And in one issue, I believe it was the Hot issue. Remember the Hot issue? I mean, they still have a Hot issue for Rolling Stone, but I don't know if anyone cares anymore about if Rolling Stone finds something hot. I mean, Peter Travers, the fucking film reviewer for Rolling Stone, is top drawer. He's top notch. He's like the best fucking film reviewer ever, perhaps. Yeah, bold statement. He's better than anybody. But other than that, I say all this shit, and yet if somehow Rolling Stone magazine wanted to like interview me or have me be part of something, I would snap to it like a little fucking Yorkie. And yeah, I'm just saying I'm a hypocrite totally and completely, but for now I'll just bash them. Although this isn't much of a bash, because they had a story, a little teeny article called Horseplay, that to this day is one of my favorite things that they ever published. It tickled me so that I cut it out of the issue and I put it up near my desk. At the time I was working at a animation studio in Peterborough, Ontario. If you listen to my first and second episode, I mentioned the time I lived in Peterborough, Ontario, ran off to go be with a guy who ran the animation studio. So I fucked my way right to the top. And no one in between, just head honcho guy. We had a TV show. It did not last because it wasn't particularly very good. Of course, we were horrified and crushed by this realization. Everyone else was just an idiot, and we were geniuses that no one was appreciating. Anyways, so I learned how to do all kinds of shit with animation. Animation is a bitch to fucking produce. It's 2D animation where it's like hand-drawn. So I had to learn how to composite, color, produce, do all that shit. I spent a lot of time looking at cartoons, and it was interesting. It was an interesting shit. I'm the type of person, I like to just jump into things. I like to try new shit. I'm a little bit more careful now that I'm older and aware that, you know, like, don't waste your life, don't waste your time. Not that it's ever been a waste, but it's like, be more selective. Don't be quite as, yes, let's, with shit. Be careful. But jump in, full spirit, full heart, full mind, full body, do it. So anyways, people would come to the studio, because, you know, people wanted to see the animation studio. It wasn't like mega big. But it was quite large, actually. There was like a full kitchen, and there was a big waiting room and lots of area to work, and they're cavernous. It was actually quite big, now that I think about it. It was almost like a bunker, because people would be sleeping all over the place because the hours were so strange and erratic with all the work we were doing, that people would just be sleeping in the living... Well, it wasn't really a living room. It was more like a meeting room, but it was glassed in. So people would just be sleeping. We had bunk beds installed in one area. People would be sleeping in the sound room. There was a whole room of instruments, because we had composers and stuff coming in. Like, it was a very busy, traffic-heavy place. So people would come in and they would tour and see our appalling lifestyle and be enthralled. And we would also have, you know, meetings with people who would come in, because outsource work and stuff like that. People would come and they'd hire us to do animation for films or documentaries or TV shows or this, that, and the other. People coming in to consult with us, people coming in to, you know, for business meetings, advice they were giving us, because we were writing grants to keep the place going and whatnot. So there would always be people, and, you know, I would give them a tour because I was always there. And, or sometimes I would see people sitting in sort of the glassed in living room area, and I'd come in and I'd say, hi, how are you? And meet up with them and hi, you know, before they had a meeting with my now ex Barney, who was my, my boss. And, so I would take them around and I would talk to them, but I would always make sure that I would bring them over to my desk and I'd say, I really want to show you something. And they'd say, oh, what? And they'd probably think it was something, you know, cartoon and fun. And of course it wasn't. So I would say, you see that article right there, Horseplay? I was like, just read that article. It's very short, as you can see. Read it. And when you're done reading it, we'll have a discussion. How's that sound? And they'd be like, oh, sure, okay, I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to do this. And they lean in and they go, okay, horseplay. Rolling Stone magazine? Oh, Rolling Stone magazine, okay. So, Enumclaw, Washington, D.C., okay. Man by the name of Mr. Hans. Oh my God. I mean, the reactions would be varied, but generally, mixture of surprise, fear, horror, confusion. They'd read it and then they'd look at me and they go, oh my God. And I could say, right? Right? Can you believe this shit? And they were like, I've never, oh my God. Wow. I didn't know that was possible. That's really, I mean, some people would be like, that's very disturbing. And I'd be like, I know, right? That's why I had to cut out the article and put it by my desk and show you. I have to show everybody. Everybody has to know about this. I called my mom as soon as I saw the article. I'm like, Mom, you got to sit down and listen to this. And she said, that's disgusting. Why'd you tell me? And I said, because I felt you needed to know. I was like, let's discuss this. Let's discuss what you've just learned about. What do you think? What do you think he's thinking? I mean, he's not thinking anything. But what do you think is going on here? And we'd talk and they'd be like, wow, he got fucked to death by a horse? I'd say, I know, right? And his name is Mr. Hans. That was not his given name. His given name was Kenneth Pinion. He was an engineer for Boeing. So he designed airplanes and like worked on top secret stuff, apparently, like aerospace shit. Which, honestly, like, I love to fly. I love to travel. I don't get to do it very much. I hope to do more of it in the future. But I love planes. I've never been scared on an airplane, even when I was, like, a little kid. I love airplanes. I think it's the safest way to travel. And when people have told me before, like, oh, I'm terrified of flying. I can't do it. Or, like, I have to take a Valium. Or, like, you know, people are vomiting because they're so scared in the air. Or they're drinking their faces off because they're so frightened. I'm like, I do not relate to this shit whatsoever. Like, I don't get it. I'm more scared in a car than I am in a fucking plane. But then I read shit like that and I'm like, oh, I get it. Maybe your fear is valid because planes are made by people and people are fucking idiots. I mean, this guy was like an aerospace engineer working on top secret shit and he got fucked to death by a horse. He let a horse anally penetrate him voluntarily and then it perforated his colon. He bled internally. And this was 2005 when I first learned about this. So the video had not surfaced yet. Yes, there's like a minute long video. He insisted on having this filmed. And it hadn't really hit the internet in the way that, I mean, Mr. Hans is now a legend of the internet. It's like an OG thing. You know, it's one of the first like shock videos that people really remember. It predates Two Girls, One Cup. It's actually, I think it's been referred to retroactively as Two Men, One Horse. It's actually Three Men and One Horse, because it looks like there's two guys. Yes, I've seen it. I'm not saying, hey, you know what? You drink too sometimes, so whatever. I don't recommend seeing it. It's pretty ghastly, to say the least. He doesn't die on camera. It's just the actual act of it. So what had happened with Mr. Hans? Mr. Hans was his nickname online. That was his handle. Someone told me that his name was Mr. Hans because he could shove both of his hands up his own ass. You know, I thought that wasn't true for a long time. I'm like, you're full of shit. I don't know where you heard that. I don't know where you read that, but you're full of fucking shit. Full of it. Get an enema. And you know what? I think they were actually right, because apparently he had been in some sort of motorcycle accident that had like caused, I don't know how this accident happened, but there was like a deadening of nerve endings or some shit like that. So he couldn't feel anything. So he got, I don't know, well known or something on the internet for shoving things up his ass. I mean, he's not the first. Like, there's plenty of people who shove things up their ass on the internet and entertain people in this manner. So for some reason, he fell into a group, as one does, on the internet, of zoophiles. So Bestiality is the act of banging an animal, and zoophiles are people who are clearly very demented, who for some reason are sexually attracted to animals and think that that's just fucking dandy. They think it's totally cool, totally fine. The internet, much like with other horrifying sexual predilections, has allowed these people to flourish, find each other, and get together and do terrible things and commit felonies. But that's the internet, man. So he fell into this group. I mean, I don't think you can fall into a group like this. You have to seek it out, and clearly, of zoophiles who would congregate in a sort of bucolic setting, partake in some libations, you know, have some gentlemanly exchanges, and then sally out into the evening and participate in some exotic carnal actions with brethren of a different type that is not man. That is to say, they would get together, get shit-faced, and stumble out in the night and fuck animals. So that's what they would do. Now, apparently, Mr. Hans was considered kind of the wimp of the group. He was kind of a wiener. I didn't know this. I had thought for a long time that Mr. Hans was the G of the group and was like, fuck you guys, I'm gonna get fucked by a horse. Watch this. Apparently, getting fucked by a horse was de rigueur over there. Like, people, they were all getting fucked by horses. All of them, all the time. He was not showboating. I mean, he sort of was, but I thought that he was daring to go where none of them had gone before. But no, they'd all been fucked by horses. And he had been fucked by horses too, but on this particular event, because he had not congregated, he had not had biblical relations with this stallion before, he, I guess, misjudged. It was a misfiring, and he got, you know, he died as a result of it. I don't feel bad for these guys. I don't feel bad for Mr. Hans, because that's, if you're doing that, I mean, my God, you need to be stopped. This is nature's way of stopping you. I feel bad for his family, because he had a son and an ex-wife, who I guess he was close to. Shit. I mean, that's just embarrassing your family for the rest of your days. You know, it's like when families who are families of like executed criminals, you know, they just live with the stigma forever. Only this is like arguably worse because this guy fucked a horse. Why am I talking about this? Because I feel like it, but also because I find it interesting. In the 10 years that I have done phone sex, I have heard all manner of fucking filth. All manner of filth. People doing like illegal shit, things people have said to me that I am like, holy balls, I cannot believe this. Things that I actually cannot repeat because they're just too vile. I've always said that the number one thing that people request day after day, every single day, usually multiple times a day, is sex with minors. That's a very sanitized way of saying children. Of all ages. The number two request is incest. Yeah, filthy. Now, I've also said before that, like, I do not participate in any sort of age play scenario nonsense. I don't even pretend to be a teenager anymore. I got away from that because it was just creeping me out too much, to be completely honest with you. The barely legal thing is just a way to sort of scapegoat the fact that they want to fuck someone who's not of age. So I'm over that shit. I'm usually 20 and up. And, I don't. And because of the sound of my voice and stuff, guys, and because there's pictures of my body on the website, you know, to entice or whatever, because I'm small, I'm a spinner. That's what they refer to ladies like me. You know, I look younger and I sound younger. So I get tons of requests and I get tons of people asking for it. And I get all kinds of messages, all kinds of calls. It's crazy. Like, it's crazy what's out there. It makes me terribly nervous for what is on the internet. I mean, watch your kids. Like, do not put them online. Don't put pictures of them online. Monitor their behavior because, holy shit, is there a lot of predators out there. It's staggering to me. Now, that's one of the taboos that I've discussed before. The real outer limits taboo stuff, even though it's heavily requested, is underage, incest, shitting, animals. Yeah, and then sometimes people, I mean, you could, I guess, put in also, like, really heavy, like, I guess, rape scenarios or like heavy bondage, like to the, like where it's just kind of clearly misogynistic crap and it's just guys wanting to beat the shit out of you and degrade you in a way that it doesn't even seem sexual. It's not sexual at that point. It's just like you need help. You need a good Thorazine drip. But of all the taboos, the one that is hated by all the other tabooists, if that's what you call them, is bestiality. That's the one thing. That is the one thing that I get almost never requested for. Kids and incest, every day. Anal, shitting. I mean, more people are into shitting now. I do not know what is happening. I guess because it's all the anal that's in porn now and like gaping assholes and stuff like that. Like people who just want to pummel your rectum until it is it's a, you know, transatlantic tunnel to somewhere out to hell, and bondage and like just really, really rough shit, like really rough stuff, really degrading shit, misogynistic sort of stuff. But the one thing that like nobody, I can count the number of times someone has like actually mentioned animals in terms of sex. And I can name all of them, and I will. And I have two of them, two calls that I have recorded. They're from my archives, my personal archives, that I recorded because I was like, oh my God, fucking gonna talk about animals. Holy shit, better catch this fucking firebug in this jar before it flutters away. So basically get the lube ready is what I'm saying. So I can count the number of times, and they really haven't been, I mean, you can't say that they're erotic. It's interesting because it's like every group has to punch down, like amongst the pedophiles, the ones that are into like hardcore stuff, like bondage, hurtcore shit, those are considered like the big scumbags of the pedophile world because they are subculture, 100%. The internet has allowed them to become a subculture. So they're considered like, oh, those are the scumbags. But like people who are into all kinds of like nasty, gross shit, like everybody hates the zoophiles. Everybody hates them. Like everybody thinks that they're absolute fucking scum. And I can understand that, you know, because like you'll see them, the ones that are like really bold. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's not happening. Just because people are not requesting it doesn't mean it's not happening. It is happening. And, you know, you see these people in, like, fucking documentaries. And they're trying to be like, I'm bringing this out of the shadows. And it's like, I wish you wouldn't. And they'll say things like the clip that I played. That's from a fucking documentary that's now pretty much an internet classic called Animal Passions. And it features an array of startlingly ugly people who fuck animals and seem to have no problem with it. And, speak about it in a very bizarre, erudite kind of way, like it's a spiritual connection, and it's like, that's not what's going on here. You're gross, and you like degrading yourself, and you clearly have something horribly wrong with you. That's the truth. But then they'll show up in these documentaries, and they pretend to be very sophisticated, and like, oh, the world just doesn't understand me. Everyone's just too judgmental. You know, that everyone's just picking on me because I like to fuck animals. Like, what's wrong with you, society? Get with the program. And, you know, and they'll always, like, they'll bring in some sexologist, some dusty fucking verge of death sexologist who's like, in ancient Greek times or, like, Babylonian times. And it's like, who gives a shit what they were doing in the time before they had fucking indoor toilets? When they were, like, shitting in the streets? Who gives a fuck? Oh, they were fucking animals? So what? It's like those NAMBLA creeps. North American Man-Boy Love Association. Those like pro-pedophile assholes who like you see them in documentaries and they act like they're some sort of persecuted minority. And they're just like, you know, back in the days of the ancient Romans, shut up. Shut up. I don't care. Oh, you know, fucking billion years ago, people were doing disgusting shit. Therefore, I should be justified in breaking the law and ruining people's lives and, you know, being awful to myself on top of it all, scarring myself and ruining my life. Because ancient people were down with it? Ugh, gross. You're nasty. You're just a shithead and you can't handle it. So you have created this wall of denial to, like, keep you from the truth about who you are and the shit that you do. That's all it is, boy. But it's pretty funny. I do find that people have this urge funny. I don't find what they do funny. I think what they do is pure animal abuse. Animals are not for us to fuck. They're for us to protect, in kind of a way. We're part of the food chain. Don't fuck them. Don't fuck them. One of the things about that documentary, Animal Passions, that I find really, like, stupid, and I mean, the whole thing is fucking stupid. It's worth watching, just because it's like, these people are unbelievable. And the soundtrack, the score of that documentary is mint. It is so stupid and depressing sounding. It just sounds like someone blowing certain, like, various notes into, like, a plastic recorder. Like, whoever is scoring this movie has given up. They're just sitting in a corner somewhere and they're like, I'm scoring a bestiality documentary. I guess they had alimony payments or something like that. And it's just like, like, it's just not even trying. With, like, this British accent. Because it's a British documentary. Because I'm sure they could find no animal fuckers in the UK. No. We had to come to America and see your animal fuckers who are different. Because they're fatter. Yeah. So, what am I even saying? So the first time I ever got a call that related to animal loving was, it really shook, like, took me by surprise, as I'm sure it would. It was, you know, in the earlier days of when I was a phone sex operator, and it was a young guy, he was in his 20s, and he was having a bit of an issue because he worked on a sheep farm. And I mean, you know, sometimes sexual tension in the workplace, right? So he was realizing that he was developing sexual feelings for the sheep he was taking care of, and he didn't know what to do about it. And I was like, well, how about you do nothing? That's always an option. How about you control yourself? That's always something you can do. You cannot fuck sheep. He hadn't thought of that. I have to say, there seems to be a correlation between low intelligence and high depravity. As much as they try to, like, pass themselves off as, like, sophisticated connoisseurs of sex, it's like, no, you're dumb and you do fucking awful things. I don't know what happened to you in your life to make you into this, but it's not really an excuse ever. You know, it doesn't matter anymore what happened because you're now a fucking filthy predator. So he was saying that, like, sometimes he'd catch the ewes, the lady sheeps, like, staring at him. And it would, like, arouse him. And he was like, do you think maybe I could, like, sneak off with one? Like, sneak off with a sheep? I was like, well, what if your boss finds you? How are you going to explain pants around your ankles, balls deep in a fucking you? What, whoops, slipped and fell? I thought something was wrong with her. So I was like, don't you think that would hurt the sheep? Like, I don't know what ram cock is like, but I don't want to. And they're not made to have sex with people. So I don't think they would appreciate it. I don't think... You know, I don't think that they would want to do it. You know, they just don't have that. I can't believe I had a conversation with somebody trying to talk them down from fucking livestock. But here I am, you know, here I am. Here's what I did. And I guess I was just in such a state of shock and disbelief that I just could not, I was just not even I could barely process it because it was like, this is, at first I thought it was a prank, but I'm like, this is an expensive prank. And then I realized, like, no, he had real genuine anguish for his, was it unrequited? He seemed to think the sheep were into him. I don't know. And I was like, dude, like, how do you get aroused in that setting? Like, it smells like animal shit. Well, okay, maybe I just answered the question. I get it. All right, who can resist when you're in that heady environment? I looked up recently when thinking about this stuff again, and I looked up a video of, like, you know, sheep farm. It's like, first of all, you're out, like, everything's open. Like, all the pens are, like, open. There's no, like, little rendezvous place you could kind of, like, sneak off to, because it's really not that type of setting. Hopefully. It's just, like, the least arousing place on the planet. And, like, looking at the ewes just, like, staring into the camera, like, flaring their nostrils with their eyes going in opposite directions, I was like, all right, well, maybe I understand. No, I was just like, how do you look at that and go, oh, I want it? Like, that's the thing about bestiality I don't understand, is that it's like, how do you look at a sheep? How do you look at a cow? How do you look at a horsey and go, oh, I want it, I need it? Like, to the point where you can't control yourself and you need to fuck it. Like, that is... Something about someone, like, rushing across a field, like, ripping their fucking overalls off, being like, I want that chicken! Like, just really, I mean, it's so gross and horrifying, but it's also, like, super funny, because some things are, even though they're awful, but I find it really funny. So I don't know what became of that guy. I heavily discouraged him from fucking the livestock. I told you why. I'm like, you could get fired, you're hurting the animals. It's not necessary. You're going to have a hard time getting a girlfriend if you make a livestock animal part of your, you know, body count, right? He didn't seem to care. He really wasn't smart. And it was like, I hope he doesn't fuck that sheep. So anyways, and he was anguished. And he's like, I'll think about it. And I was like, oh, please. That's, think about it forever until you don't have this job anymore. You know, just keep thinking about it and don't ever do anything about it. God, do you think the sheep, like, are uncomfortable because he's standing there staring at them? Like, that's why they're staring at you, because you're staring at them. So they're like, what? You know, two can play this game. Like, outstare an animal? Outstare fucking livestock? You're not on your life, buddy. Yeah, just wrong. But anyways, that was the very first call. The second time, I mean, the guy, I could totally picture the type of person he was. He was just that type of person that you meet them and you're just like, I would never want to be alone in a room with you, because I really think that you, I don't know if you've ever done anything that should get you in jail. Maybe you've just never been caught, but you really creep me out. You really give me heavy, like, serial killer-y vibes. He's probably the type of person, actually, that would go to, like, a police station and, you know, confess to being a serial killer because he wants the attention, but he's never actually killed anybody for real. He's just, like, depressed or something, but he's one of those people. That's who I think he could be. The type of guy, I could just picture him. He's, like, skinny white guy, like, really out of shape, who's got, like not fat, but just, like, ugh, like, knows nothing of physical exercise, and, you know, has, like, a bunch of really poorly placed, badly done, spreading tribal tattoos all over his body, just kind of randomly, like, badly, like, what the fuck does any of this mean on his, like, shitty, lumpy body, you know, like, infected nipple rings, just gives you that real, prolapsed rectum, probably, weird scars on his dick, and it's like, where did you get the, like, teeth mark scars on the inside of his thighs, like, just a real bad hygiene, like, really bad breath, just really that type of person Yeah, I think you know the type of person I mean. If you don't, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell you. I just have a great imagination. And he told me he was a casual bestiality porn watcher. Put that on a business card. And I completely believe him because of the type of person he was. Like, he was just really gross and really creeped me out. And it's like, you know, he'd be the type of person that would have, like, a lonely peanut butter moment, you know, with, like, a dog that was drug-induced. And, yeah, so he said that he was a casual bestiality porn watcher. And he said one time, and this is one of the most memorable things anyone has ever said to me on the phone sex line. So, and I'm not whistling Dixie. I'm not fooling around here. This is genuinely one of the funniest, weirdest things, most magical things anyone has ever said. You never know where salvation will come. And he said that one time he was watching a video of a guy fuck a cow. He was standing on a bucket. And, he said the weirdest thing about the video was that the guy was wearing only Argyle socks. What? I mean, the weirdest thing about the video of a guy standing on a bucket fucking a cow is that he was only wearing Argyle socks. He just thought that was a really strange kind of fashion choice for the activity. Maybe his feet were cold. I don't know. I mean, you would think if you were fucking a cow standing on a bucket, I mean, it could be kind of slippery. I don't know. What am I even talking about anymore? But anyways, I'll never forget that because it's so retarded. I think I'll get a tattoo to myself somewhere. That'll make sure that I have lots of friends and lovers in the future, I'm sure.
JRHNBR. Just the right height, no bucket is required. I happen to have a pony mare that is JRHNBR. And that's really nice because you're not trying to do a balancing act standing on something.
It's so funny the guys start comparing about what they used to stand on.
Or how, what is more stable. Or how they disguise it in their car. Or then you go to a strange barn and you start and you catch the guys checking the bottoms of the feed buckets for footprints.
So yeah, he was another dude. Another dude who was into it. Like I said, it's mostly like drug-induced shit. So how often do you let the dog suck your fucking balls?
Oh, every time when you leave sometimes, baby.
What?
I jack off, and the dog comes up and starts licking my ass, and it feels so good.
Oh.
I reach under and I start stroking his dick, and it gets so big. And I can't resist the temptation of that big doggy dong, so I get on my hands and knees and suck it.
You're a fucking filthy whore.
Only for you, baby.
Well, for the dog, too, apparently. Yeah.
I know how much it turns you on, me being so disgusting.
I know. Well, now that's why you've been doing it, right? You've been sucking off the dog because you knew you were going to tell me one day and it was going to turn me on because I'm just as fucked up as you.
But yeah. You know why I did it? Because I hid behind the door one time and watched you let the dog lick your cunt.
What?
Because you're disgusting too, yeah?
What? When did you see that? When did you see that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I did. I saw that, baby. And that's when I knew I married the right woman. You laid back and you moaned and groaned when that dog licked your cunt. And that jacked off.
Well, it's not the first dog that I've ever taken as a lover.
Oh, really?
No.
Really?
No, it's not.
Tell me about it.
Well.
How old were you the first time you did it, huh?
19.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you like the big dog fucking you, huh?
Well.
Dirty slut?
Well, at first I didn't let the dog fuck me. I just, let the dog go down on me. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I didn't get into dog fucking until a little bit later on.
Yeah. Well, I was jacking off watching porn and a dog come up on me the first time and started licking my ass. I had my feet up on the ottoman and the dog slipped up under me and started licking my ass and I felt so fucking good. I couldn't stop it. And I came so hard and he licked the cum off of me. And then we started doing it daily when you were gone. Sometimes you would come home before I came. That's why I would
So you've been fucking the dog.
What?
So you've been fucking the dog?
Oh, yeah. Just like you.
Yeah, I guess we've both been fucking the dog.
Yeah. Tell me what is the dirty, twisted stuff you like, baby. Since we're being so open with each other.
Well. Sometimes
don't be afraid to tell me.
Sometimes I fuck my brother.
Fuck what, baby?
My brother. Oh, I don't want to know about that. There's a documentary about Kenneth Pinion, Mr. Hands, and it's called Zoo. It came out in like 2007, 2008. I went to Sundance. I spent forever trying to find this fucking documentary. I was really creeping the people out at the fucking video store. Because I was like, do you have this documentary? And they're like, what's it about? And they thought it was this Gaga Kids movie. And I was like, oh, here we go. I'm like, do you know Mr. Hands? And they like were pretending they didn't know. And I'm like, okay, don't look up the video, but Mr. Hands got fucked to death by a horse. There's no other way to say it. And they made a documentary about it. And I really, really want to see it because I think it's all very funny. And they were like, well, we can order it for you specifically. And I was like, I don't want to keep it. And they were like, okay, well, we'll order it or whatever, and then we'll put it in the store. And I'm like, other people will see it. Trust me. You're going to watch it for sure. So it took me forever to get it, and I had to scare a lot of people to do it. And then I finally got it, was extraordinarily excited, because hello, how often do you get to see something? And it was about Mr. Hands. Mr. Hands. I'm fascinated by Mr. Hands. He's a fucking aerospace engineer for Boeing who got fucked to death by a horse. I mean, if you're going to pretend you're not interested in that, fine. Live a lie. But I am fascinated by this, okay? People are my hobby. Like, watching people, figuring out why they're so insane, I never figure out why. So at the time I was dating Eric. I've mentioned Eric in the past. Episodes. He was my boyfriend at the time. He's been a friend of mine for forever. I refer to him as family now. He's the shit. He's the shit. And any kind of like weird fucked up thing, he indulges me. And I indulge him in his weird fucked up things too. He always has ideas, schemes, scams, all kinds of things. And I am always like, I will question some of the things he does. I will be like, well, how are you going to pull this fucking weird thing off? You know, I challenge him, but he's the guy to call when you're down for something weird. And obviously we're in a relationship and I just had a fucking documentary about bestiality. I'm like, let's have a romantic night. And so I had been talking about this documentary and whining about never finding it because I did try to stream it online. No luck. And I was like, I finally have it. Get over here right now. We're watching it. And of course he hopped to it because we were both down. And I've never been more disappointed in my life in a movie. Like, I can't remember any other time that I was more like, maybe Star Wars, when Phantom Menace came out. That was a real shitty bummer. That was like shit your pants and protest bad. Like, holy fuck. Wow. Oh, this is how it's gonna be. Scam. The fact that people still go to the theater expecting the next Star Wars movie to be good, actually, after all these years, man. You know, you can yell at fucking Luke Skywalker. Who is it? George Lucas? George Skywalker. That guy. All you want, but you're the sucker who keeps going to the theater thinking, well, maybe this time it's good. It hasn't been good in like 25 years. So like, you figured out, dumbass. What a scam. It's good to make money that way. So anyways, I was very disappointed when it ended. It's only like an hour and 15 minutes, which is such a scam. Like, that's a documentary? I don't fucking think so, buddy. Like, you couldn't actually get 15 more minutes of a fucking, like, these are people who fucked horses, and you can't squeeze in an extra 15 minutes for the audience? Blow me. Anyways, when it ended, we just sat in silence, and then Eric gave a summation of the film that I think is one of the best fucking goddamn reviews of any film that I've ever heard before in my life. It's just a one-liner. And he said, that was a very pastoral documentary on bestiality. Very true. It's so baffling. Like, it's unbelievable. Not only is it boring, but it's also just infuriating because the director clearly is siding with the horse fuckers, which is such a shock, first of all, because, like, why would you do that? But also, like, that's not the point of a documentary. You're supposed to be objective. And if you're going to pick a side in a fucking thing like that, hello? You're picking the poor little horse fuckers? And they were talking about how, like, they were wrongfully persecuted, and the guy, you know, he's like, after he died, they came and took all my animals away. Yeah, because you were abusing them, dumbass. Because you are so irresponsible at, like, taking care of animals that some guy ended up on your ranch dying because he stuck a horse wiener up his ass. You don't have very good judgment. Sorry. You know, and he was getting all mad because they brought, like, this horse rescuer onto the ranch to, like, retrieve the horse that had, you know, done the deed. They called him by nickname. They called him Big Dick. He wasn't even their horse. Like, they fucking, like, came, like, they snuck onto the fucking property like bandits and fucking used this horsey. And there's a hilarious scene. There's reenactments, but not of the good kind. Well, actually, they're pretty funny because it's people sitting around, like, pretending to watch this video of Mr. Hands and be horrified, and they show these, like, two old people at the police station, and they're showing them the Mr. Hands video of him getting fucked, and they're, of course, like, oh my god, and they're like, is that your horse? And they're like, yes, like, it's so funny. It's like, how is that necessary? You showed these old people, like, you didn't, like, come on, you didn't have to do that. You just wanted to see the reaction to the fucking video. Because they found the video on the property and they were like, we figured out what happened. Because he got punctured and then they took him to the fucking hospital and then they just dumped him outside. Some friends. Anyways, but it is on YouTube. I recommend seeing it because this man should not have any money given his way for this atrocity of film. But yeah, it's all, like, arty and, like, avant-garde and, like, tries to be, like, all, like, sympathetic. And they're like, I'm a bad person, according to society, because I love animals more than anybody else. Like, oh, please. Oh, please, bitch, please. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? There's, like, scenes where the rancher, like, there's a news helicopter over his home. And he's, like, running in slow motion through the field to get away from the news helicopter. And he was like, all of a sudden, I was descended upon. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, I wonder why. And some of them are like, you know, a tragedy occurred here. Yeah, because you guys are fucking idiots. Like, they made it sound like they just got together. They were just having a little bit of fun. And then, you know, romance, romance. Like, what's a man to do? And it's just, it's so infuriating, but it's funny too. I read an interview with the documentary maker in Vice, and, like, what a pretentious guy. Holy fucking balls. And he was like, these people lost a community. They lost something that they loved. Oh, they lost the opportunity to fuck animals? They lost the opportunity to be abusive? Oh, okay. Yeah, wham. Like, they lost a community? And he also tried to say in the article that he's like, I don't think they were into animals. I think they were just into really big dicks. Yeah, except that big dick is attached to an animal. No one needs cock that badly unless you're actually, like, a complete pervert who's just, like, into fucking animals. Like, literally fucking animals. It's weird. It's like you see these creeps and they're trying to gaslight everyone and be... And it's effective, because obviously the documentary maker fucking fell for it, like a sap. It's so stupid. It's called Zoo, because they call themselves zoos. You should call yourselves dead, because you're fucking idiots. What are you doing? What are you doing? And yeah, there's all these, like, weird interactments of them, like, making, like, margaritas in a blender, you know, and smoking and stuff, like, getting together, putting on some music, just having, you know, having a little gents evening, a little evening of animal appreciators. Fucking disgusting. funny, though. I mean, I recommend seeing the documentary just to see someone so fucking with their head so far up their ass that they don't even realize that, you know, this guy died with a horse's cock in his. Does that make any sense? I don't know. Who cares? Anyways. So, there is another animal story, but it's a little bit different. So to start off, I specialize in feminization on the phone sex line. I have mentioned this before. I'll probably get more into it in the future. It's something that I fell into, which is tells you a lot about the course of my life, to be like, I fell into this like obscure fetish that I now make a lot of money off of on the phone sex line. Yeah, that's how I roll. So that is, it's men who, it's a fetish called autogynephilia. So paraphilias are fetishes. It's zoophilia, literally means from the Greek love of animals, which is hilarious. There's some people who do not want zoophilia included in the paraphilias because they just consider it too fucking foul. They're like, we don't really want you people. Because zoophiles, they consider it like a sexual orientation instead of, you know, what it is, which is a horrific mental disorder of some sort that can't be cured. So autogynephilia is men who sexually fetishize being women. Like, they fetishize the female body. They want the female body. Like, they fetishize about having tits. They fetishize about having a pussy. They fetishize about, you know, being a woman. Like, they look at women and they see them as fetish objects, essentially. That doesn't mean necessarily that their objectification is misogynist, because I rarely met any feminization guys. They call themselves sissies. That's what they refer to themselves as. They're usually straight, or they're bisexual, or like kind of bi-curious. And one of the reasons that they like to be turned into women is that it allows them to indulge in their homosexual urges without actually being like, I want dick. Like, that gives them an alter ego. So these men, I mean, it's kind of like if you've ever seen the movie Ed Wood. Ed Wood was, you know, very famous, terrible filmmaker who notoriously dressed up as a woman for sexual gratification, but he was straight. And that's him. That's the guy. That's what autogynephilia is. They have no desire to transition medically. They don't necessarily have gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria is a whole different thing, because this is a fetish. Like, this is for sexy time. They like that there's two parts of them. They like that they're a man, you know, sometimes usually a man with like high powered job or important job or family or girlfriend, wife, kids, responsibilities. And then they have this alter ego who they usually give a name to, this like feminine side of themselves that is like a trashy tart that lives for cock. So usually the feminization process is, they'll sometimes have like their own, sometimes they'll be really advanced. Like they'll you know, get their body waxed and wear makeup and wigs and full outfits, like lingerie, women's outfits, you know, bras that are padded, that sort of thing. Some of them are kind of in the infancy, as it were, in their exploration. So some of them just like, they wear ladies' underwear and suck dick or something like that. Or they're kind of like, there's some of them go all the way, like they go full hilt. But then there's other ones that are kind of like dipping their toe in the water. And they want to be referred to as like sluts and whores and sissies and like degraded. So they basically, their alter ego is a really like trashy, sexually flamboyant woman who is just incredibly promiscuous, just lives for cock. So it's a way for them to indulge their want to have sex with men, but they don't want to do it like as men. Because I think in their minds, it's like, it's a bridge too far. They can't just like go have sex with men and have sex with women and just be like, I'm bisexual, whatever, who gives a shit. They have to like have that extra component, because they think in their minds, usually, whether they realize it or not, that like being gay means that you're not a real man. Personally, I think being gay means you're more of a man, because It takes a strong constitution to fucking take a dick up the ass on a regular basis and suck cock sucking cock is an art form, and I tell them this and they know it, and so they'll come to me and I, you know, I boss them around and I tell them how to lady correctly, and they get me to critique them and I send them on assignments. I said before, I've gotten them to go and buy lingerie or sexy outfits for themselves. The big you would G if you do this is going to get fitted for a bra. Like, as a guy. Be like, hi, I'm looking for a bra. And they'll be like, do you know her size? And they're like, I don't know my size. I came to get measured. And then they get measured and shit. And then they walk out with bras. Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to be a lady, you got to be a warrior. You know, I get them to shave their legs or get waxed. I've done that many times. That's also some warrior shit. They're terrible at applying makeup usually. Because I'm not doing this in person. You know, sometimes it'll be on webcam or something, or they'll send me pictures, or I'll send them like makeup tutorials and get them to buy makeup for themselves and like learn how to put it on and shit. They're really bad at it. It looks like a orangutan with a crayon on their face, which sometimes works because they want to be like ugly, trashy girls. Like, they'll have beards with like glitter and shit like this. I mean, gender bending is not new in any stretch of the imagination. Like, hi, David Bowie, or like Freddie Mercury. Like, if you've ever seen the I Want to Break Free video, he's in full drag. Like, he's got a stuffed bra, he's got a blonde wig. He's like prancing around like a lady, but he's got like a full, big, huge, like, leather daddy mustache. Right? And it's like all the, like, Rocky Horror Picture Show. There's a reason why it's one of the most successful musicals of all time. Because it's interesting. Like, people love androgyny. They love kind of mixing it up in that way. I've always loved it myself. I think maybe because when I was, like, younger, I was mistaken for a boy a lot, which was really, it made me really sad. Like, it made me feel not like a woman. Like, I'm not, as I've said before, I'm a spinner. Like, I'm small, you know, I don't have big tits. I don't have like a super crazy, like curvy womanly body. I've said before, like, if I shave my head, I look like a teenaged boy, like teenage skinhead. And I used to get mistaken for a boy. Like, I used to get kicked out of ladies' bathrooms because people thought I was a boy, which is really embarrassing when you're young. So yeah, I learned to, and I didn't really develop, I mean, I hit puberty, but I didn't like develop like other girls. I got my period mega late. My boobs never grew. I never really got past a training bra. Everybody else seemed to be like turning into a woman, and I felt like I was sort of left behind, and I was a boy, and I was being mistaken for a boy, and like other boys boys didn't like me, but I mean, girls usually did. Like, girls would have crushes on me, I guess, because maybe I looked like a boy, but I was a girl. So I don't know, and I guess over time I learned to embrace it, and I learned to see that it was actually like, no, androgyny's hot. Like, Kate Moss, you know, like, she was real different because it was like, oh, it's like, you know, skinny girl who's still hot. And I just learned to embrace it over time, and I learned that, because I thought I was so ugly for so long and like so not pretty, and like I just hated that, and it made me sad. It was like, I always thought like, I'll never be able to say I'm a beautiful woman, and that like makes me feel really sad. I know that that's like super vain and stuff, but it's like I'd see all the other girls around me like flourishing and becoming more womanly and pretty and being looked at by other people with sort of envy or desire, and I just felt like I was kind of not there, you know. I wasn't considered pretty or sexy or anything like that. And I guess, like, yeah, over time, as I branched out more into my adult years and stuff like that, and got involved in like fetish things, and saw that there's like all these different types of sexiness and beauty, and it isn't just this like one way, that actually people are really turned on by androgyny. And like I said, Freddie Mercury, I had a big Freddie Mercury poster in my room when I was a kid. It was kind of a icon. I guess I was attracted to the androgyny. I've always liked that, and I've always liked David Bowie and Robert Plant and like all the rock stars of like 60s, 70s, 80s. Like they all have long hair. They all dress in women's clothing a lot of the times. So they wear makeup. They wear eyeliner. I mean, the glam metal bands, they were like slamming puss left and right, and they had like full face of makeup on. And I just was like, I don't know, I just, and they're hot. I love that. I love the mixing it up. I mean, there's like kabuki theater, and back in the day in Japan, like all the female parts were played by men, and the men in the kabuki theater were considered like superstars. They were kind of like drag queens of their time, but they dressed as women and they acted very effeminately. So anyways, I'm saying all this because, yeah, I ended up like falling into feminization because I feel more of a like I'm a woman now. Like I feel like I've definitely started to embrace being a woman, and I love being a female. Like I absolutely love it, and I appreciate all the witchcraft and all the magic that comes from being a woman. And I feel very, I don't know, it's a like really beautiful goddess feeling to be a lady. Sometimes you can feel very disempowered, but if you can sort of lock more into feeling comfortable with yourself and having that kind of like beautiful goddess energy, then it can be like a real amazing natural high. So I guess I've always been open-minded. Like I said, I love Rocky Horror Picture Show, and I, you know, dated guys who wore eyeliner and were kind of a bit more, I don't know, they were just more comfortable with their sexuality. And then I dated a cross-dresser for a while who used to wear my clothes, which the only problem I had was that he would like stretch out my sweaters because of his shoulders. Like in Ed Wood, like just like in Ed Wood, how are like Angora sweaters keep getting stretched out, and it's because Ed Wood is borrowing them and wearing them as a lady. It is kind of annoying because you're like, I really like this sweater, and I know that you really like this sweater too, but like you stretch out the shoulders, but that didn't stop him from wearing it. Ah, whatever. But these guys definitely were straight. They weren't interested in, you know, becoming a woman full time. They liked having a dick. They liked using their dick, but they wanted to play it up. I guess it's also sort of like seen as a humiliation, you know, like a guy dressing up as a woman is still considered kind of like a humiliation in a sense, like he's prancing around in high heels and stuff like that. Obviously the perception has changed, but I think there's still that element within guys that is like, oh, dressing up like a chick, you know, it's taking a walk on the wild side of things. Like being a man who's obviously dressed up like a woman, there's like a level of people are going to notice you and humiliate you, and you're going to feel, I mean, there's like a clown element to it, especially with the way the guys do it with feminization. I mean, people love drag queens. People love all kinds of fucking Grace Jones. Like there's Steven Tyler, like all these people in pop culture who are riding the gender line, Iggy Pop, like everyone loves that shit. It's nothing new. People dig it. So yeah, on the feminization line, years ago, I got a call, and it was from someone who was called Stacy, and Stacy was explained that she was a trans woman, so she was presenting full-time as a woman. She was called Stacy, that she changed her name, she went to work as a woman, woke up every day, you know, shaved her legs, put on makeup, wore the wig, that sort of thing. And that's cool. I've talked to a couple trans women on the feminization line. Like, very few of the feminization guys actually end up sort of realizing that they have gender dysphoria and that they were born in the wrong body. Because that's very different. That's a very different experience. One is a sexual fetish. The other one is an identity crisis. So, and, you know, very challenging to one's physical and mental health. So Stacy had not begun hormone therapy as of yet. Everything was like very, very new, but like planned fully for that. And Stacy was extremely needy. And I don't necessarily, like, she glommed onto me very, very quickly. And I could tell very quickly that Stacy was a really, really emotionally needy person. And the problem with that is that Stacy would want to stay on the phone with me for many, many hours, would not want to get off the phone. And that's fine. I'm a marathon talker, and I can talk about pretty much anything with anybody for the most part. But Stacy was not a good conversationalist, unfortunately. Stacy didn't just seem to desperately want to stay on the phone, but wouldn't really keep the conversation going. And everything she wanted to talk about was just sex. And she would masturbate several times when we were talking and was just kind of obsessed with sex. Clearly a sex addict. She was profoundly, profoundly promiscuous. Just mostly fucked men, occasionally fucked women, but mostly fucked men. And was, you know, like gang bang. I mean, one of the interesting things about Stacy was that every weekend she would go to the gay bathhouse and just fuck everybody there, and while presenting as a woman. And I was always so curious about the gay bathhouse. I've always wanted to go to one. And Stacy, I was like, do you think I could ever go? I mean, this is, you know, in our imaginations. And she's like, no, it's not possible because you're a biological woman. Like, I can go in there because I, even though I'm presenting like female, I'm still clearly, like, I'm trans, so I still have a dick. And if anybody, you know, biological woman being in a gay bathhouse is like, why would you be there? Like, you wouldn't even be working there. The only biological women actually that I've ever heard of being in a gay bathhouse is Bette Midler, because that's where she got her start in show business, as Bathhouse Betty at the New York bathhouses. She would sing and tell jokes and stuff, and they loved her. Her accompanist was Barry Manilow. I find that so funny. Like, you can shit all over that guy for being the most bland musician ever, but he's rich as shit. He is swimming in coin. Like, he wrote, like, jingles before he became, like, big, big famous. And he wrote, like, the Band-Aid brand fucking jingle. Like, I am stuck on Band-Aid brands because Band-Aid stuck on me. That's Barry Manilow. That's one fucking jingle. And he wrote like a slew of them. Holy shit balls. So yeah, so she was Bathhouse Betty. And then one of her albums was called Bathhouse Betty. And there's like footage of her in the gay baths. And there's like all these guys wearing towels sitting around like laughing at her, telling jokes, and she's singing. And then there's another woman. Her name's Lena Love. She's from Toronto. And she used to perform at the gay bathhouses. I never saw her at the gay bathhouse because I'm not allowed to go. But she's the only biological woman that I know of that also performed at the gay bathhouse. But that's because she was performing and she was really, really big in the gay pride scene. She's interesting. I met her a couple times. She's kind of intimidating. She's very Grace Jones-esque. Like, she's a bodybuilder, female bodybuilder. So she's like mega ripped. And yeah, she's a performer. I don't think she performs that much anymore, but she's something else. But yeah, she used to perform at the gay bathhouses in Toronto, which I was mega jealous of. But Stacy would always call me and report back from things that had, you know, tell me about her escapades at the gay bathhouse, because I was so curious and envious and wanted to know so much. But yeah, Stacy was just sex obsessed and very indiscriminate, very, very constantly masturbating, clearly a sex addict, and didn't have anything else to really talk about. I don't think Stacy was stupid. I think that Stacy was limited. I think Stacy was so insecure. That's what fueled her promiscuity, was just the need for the constant validation. And, you know, I've said before that I've been promiscuous in my life. And so I understand. I was never like that kind of level of Stacy, but it doesn't matter because I do know what it's like to be promiscuous. And I think sometimes for people, promiscuity can be like liberating or fun, whatever. But I think there's also a lot of times where it's like punishment. It's desperation. I look back at some of the people that I had sex with when I was promiscuous. I've told some of these stories on here, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I shouldn't have given these people the time of day, to be totally honest with you, because they were beneath me. And by that I mean they were just shitty, and they just wanted to fuck me, and they had no care whatsoever about my pleasure or happiness or anything like this. They just wanted to use me up and throw me away. And I let them do that. And some people, I think, are maybe into that dynamic of, like, they want to be degraded and they want to be, like, treated like a complete whore. And that really gets them off. But it's just not really who I am. It's just not really my thing. It started to just become very depressing. It was like, how many times are you going to do this and get the exact same result? You know, you're living out the definition of insanity. You just keep trying and trying. But, like, you, nothing... nothing is changing, and it just was really, I just had to stop, because it was just like, I get nothing out of this. And I like being extremely picky now. It's more my speed, it's more my thing. And it's like, I want, you know, people to try. I don't want to be easy, I want to be difficult. Sometimes there's a benefit to it. But yeah, Stacy, I mean, I understand why she was like that. She was just really needy, just needed somebody there. And despite her sexual promiscuity, like, she would admit to me that she wished that she could, like, find a relationship, like, someone to, like, be in love with. And I don't think she knew herself well enough or understood her own psychological mechanism, which is why she couldn't carry a conversation, because she just didn't think about herself and just didn't think about the things she did. She lived a very superficial existence, which she didn't need to, because she wasn't stupid, but she chose to live a very limited life because it was all based on what other people thought of her and the attention she got. And she clearly liked the attention of being trans and of being different. And she felt that, you know, that brought people out of the woodwork, that brought out, you know, straight guys who want to get with trannies, tranny chasers, they're called. They're still called tranny chasers, even though that might be considered derogatory at this point. But it's like straight guys who want to have sex with women who have penises. That's still very much a thing. So yeah, Stacy could be a little irritating, to be honest with you, because I don't know, I'm repelled by neediness. Because I'm scared to be needy myself. I am the opposite. I push people away, which is something I'm working on, because it sucks. But I'm so afraid of being needy that I go extreme and I start pushing people away. I don't want to need people, because it's awful when they, like, leave you. It's so stupid and basic, but, like, you know, I'm working through it. But I guess, you know, I know what it's like to feel like the strings of your universe have sort of been severed and you're just falling through space. You're just in this crazy free fall and you just grab onto anything or anyone on your way down, on your descent down. You just reach out and grab people. Like, are you going to keep me from falling? Are you going to keep me from falling? Like, tell me I'm worthwhile. Tell me I'm something. You know, it's like, when you have no sense of self because you have no self-esteem and you don't understand yourself, and you feel outside your body and alienated, it becomes, you rely on other people and what they think or feel of you. And without their opinion or without their validation of you, then you don't exist. Like, you just need them to graft your personality. Like, tell me who I am. And that's very, very dangerous. Because, you know, people can really blow your ego up, or they can really rip you down. And it's so unstable. It depends on if they like you or they don't like you. Like, you're up and down, up and down. And, you know, you need to be able to have a baseline about yourself. So something interesting happened in that Stacy kind of vanished for some time. And I didn't really notice, to be totally honest with you. Like, I did notice at first because she wasn't calling me every weekend to tell me about the bathhouses. And then I realized after a while, like, oh, Stacy really hasn't called in a long time. Nothing I can do about it. I don't know who Stacy really is. And then sometime later, quite a while later, somebody called back. This somebody was named Larry, and Larry had been Stacy. Larry was Stacy. I don't know how you look at it. Stacy had detransitioned, basically. Because when I, as I mentioned, Stacy was preparing to transition medically, and I believe she had, you know, she had gone to the doctor and stuff like that, and was about to, she may have even been on hormones at the time when I still was talking to her. I really don't know. I don't remember because it was a while ago. I remember a lot about this, but that particular aspect, not entirely sure. So Larry had been Stacy. Larry still used Stacy as an alter ego, still dressed up as Stacy to achieve sexual gratification, but throughout the day now was no longer Stacy full time. Just Larry. Larry was a guy. Larry presented as a man. And then Larry would sometimes be Stacy. Although he was Stacy quite a lot, I should say. I tried to look up statistics on detransitioning, and I couldn't find really solid ones, to be totally honest with you. It's all over the map. Like, I've seen, I read, maybe I'm just not looking right, but like, some places I read it's as much as 40%. Some, it was like 1.6%. Like, I couldn't really get any solid data. There's lots of people on YouTube who talk about their detransition stories. I feel like detransitioning is probably not being paid attention to, or it's being kind of covered up because people feel that it will invalidate trans people, you know, like, well, look, you know, so many of you think you want this, but you don't. Or yes, it's like fuel to the fire of, like, you know, like that sort of thing. Fuel to the fire of people saying, well, I told you so. It's, you know, these people are unstable. They don't even know what they want. They thought they wanted to completely change their sex, and turns out they don't. Like, how can we, you know, trust these people? They're nuts. Whatever. Like, I think that that information is kind of buried because it can be weaponized. And it probably, you know, makes trans people feel like what they're going through is considered not real, I guess, or not valid. I guess the equivalent would be, and I've said this before, like, I am a sexual assault survivor, a domestic violence survivor, and yeah, hearing about women who report sexual assault or domestic assault, and it turns out that they're lying, and they just did it for, you know, for attention, for revenge, for money. Like, yeah, that's very, very disconcerting. And to be totally honest with you, there are a lot of rape apologists out there, believe it or not, who like to cite those instances more than anything when it comes to sexual assault. Like, well, can you really trust anybody? Can you really trust women? I mean, there's people who think that that all women have this ace up their sleeve that is, well, if you fuck me over, I'm going to accuse you of rape. And then what's going to happen? You know, your life's going to be ruined. And it's like, unfortunately, that does fucking happen. There are women out there who do that. And it's awful and spiteful and just disgusting. But that does not account anywhere near for the amount of sexual assault and domestic violence that happens that is genuine. It's rampant. It's all over the place. But people like to focus on the women who lie about it because it's more sensational. And it also detracts from having to take in the fact that, oh my God, like, this is happening a lot, and it's happening across all different demographics. So I think that with the detransitioning statistics, it's probably, yeah, it's weaponized against trans people, and it's a way for people to say, to not have to, like, welcome them into society, or not have to consider them, or think about it, or anything like this. It's a way for people to dismiss them and not have to face that they're uncomfortable, that there are people who want to do this. That's just my, like, take on it. But they're real, you know? People detransition. It happens. And I think it's honestly owed more to pressure that, like, the medical world is having on them. You know, gender has become, and gender identity has become so heavily politicized that now there's, like, pressure on doctors and bureaucracies within medical communities to, you know, to immediately sort of take everybody's word for it and immediately diagnose, like, gender dysphoria and then start them on a regimen of hormones. And for some people, this is appropriate treatment, but not for everybody. And I think with Stacy's case, to be completely honest with you, she never really talked about the detransitioning, what happened exactly. She seemed to kind of avoid the topic. And I didn't press because, you know, if someone doesn't want to talk about something, they're not going to talk about something. But I would guess that Stacy probably didn't pass the psych evaluation. I know that sounds mean, but you do have to get psychologically tested in order to transition because it's an arduous emotional and physical journey. And there can be complications. You know, if you're going to get surgery, there can be all kinds of things. Like, it's intense. It's tough. I can't even imagine. But the thing is that, you know, you got to make sure that someone is prepared for it. It's like if someone's too sick or their body's too weakened, you know, for whatever reason, and they can't have, they can't perform surgery on them, even though it's necessary, because it's like, well, the surgery will kill them. It's like, you can't put someone through the rigors of transitioning if they really are not psychologically fit for it, or it's just not what's appropriate for them. And with Stacy, I would think that Stacy was more of homosexual autogynephilia. I think she fetishized the female body. That's the impression I got, that she fetishized the female body. She fetishized the attention that women can get from men. She fetishized being special, different. And because she loved the attention that she got at the bathhouses because she was, you know, the only trans woman. That might sound shallow, but I really do think that that's the case. Because I've met and spoken to many trans people, phone sex line, met them in my life. And when you meet somebody who has transitioned, it's incredible. They are who they're destined to be. It's amazing. It's like, wow, this is, I cannot see that this person was ever the opposite sex because they so fully embrace and embody this version of themselves, that clearly this is who they're supposed to be. You know, they went through a lot to get here. This is not easy, but clearly this is who they were destined to be. With Stacy, I just didn't feel that way. I felt Stacy was, yeah, she fetishized female bodies. She objectified the female body. She liked the attention. And I think that she mistook that for being, oh, well, I want to be, well, I must have gender dysphoria. I must mean that I need to be a woman all the time. Like, I need to transition. And I think that that's something that happens that people don't want to talk about because, once again, they feel like it delegitimizes the trans community. And it's like, no, there's people who have gender dysphoria genuinely, and they don't make up a huge part of the population, but they exist. But then there are people who they think that they have gender dysphoria, but they turns out they don't. You know, you watch these detransition stories and it's like they thought that this was the answer, but it wasn't. And one of the challenging things about treating gender dysphoria, which it's not even considered a condition anymore. And it's like, well, then what is it? Why would you go to a doctor for it? There's nothing wrong with having a condition, mental or physical. I have several mental illnesses. That's fine. I manage them as best I can. I don't see why. I guess because then everybody can sort of say, well, gender dysphoria is a mental disease or it's a mental illness. So it's not, you know, how can you trust these people? They're crazy, they're unstable. And it's like, no, people live with mental conditions. What's wrong with that? I mean, obviously you're in pretty tremendous mental anguish if you truly believe that you were born in the wrong body. I don't see why it's a problem to say, like, yeah, it's a medical condition that requires medical intervention and medical treatment. I mean, otherwise, why would they be seeing doctors? Why would they be under the care of an endocrinologist and having regular medical treatments? I mean, doesn't that mean that it's a condition? You don't go to a doctor and get treated for something that isn't a condition. I think it's just politics that are confusing everything and making everything not make sense. It's just a mess. People go too far. They go too far with their beliefs, and they go to a place where it's shit stops making sense, and it actually doesn't help people. You know, like, it was good to call gender dysphoria a condition, because it meant that these people needed medical treatment, which means that they have the right to transition if that's what's right for them. But by negating that, saying it's not a condition, it's like, well, then what is it that these people need? So yeah, I've read stuff about gender dysphoria and the fact that, you know, there's an ongoing debate within the medical world, because they say, well, the only way we know how to treat this is to transition people. But what if that's not correct? Because you can have gender dysphoria and you can have other issues. Like, you can have drug issues, depression, anxiety, bipolar disease. Like, you could have anything. It's comorbid. And it's like, well, what if transitioning someone doesn't work? Because transitioning won't take away, you know, if you have issues with trauma, the trauma will not go away because you've transitioned. It might even make it worse, because now you have the additional pressures of hormone therapy and changing yourself and changing your whole life. Like, it's a big deal. So it's like, well, what if, and in the detransition stories I've seen, that was sort of the thing, was that it was like, I thought that this was the right thing to do. I was under the care of a doctor, and I started to realize this is not helping. I don't feel better. I don't feel happier. I don't feel less suicidal. I'm still an addict. I'm still this or that. So it's like, all that stuff needs to be treated before they transition, because sometimes people can sort of hide within a presumed diagnosis. I don't think that Stacy was really trans. I think Stacy didn't want to be Larry so badly that they had created this alter ego out of sexual fetish, because that's just part of who he was, and it made him stand out, and it made him her. I don't even know what pronoun to use, to be totally honest with you, but it's like, it made Stacy stand out. It made Stacy feel special. It allowed Stacy to be really, really slutty. And if there was any shame about being gay, that was kind of pushed away, because he was, oh, well, I'm a woman. So there was probably that aspect of it. He didn't have to deal with that. He didn't have to deal with his insecurities about just being himself. Stacy was an escape. And because she was a sex addict, she didn't realize that she was just living inside of a fetish 24/7, and she was trying to make that her whole life and legitimize it. And I don't know if she just came to the realization that it wasn't the right thing to do because it wasn't making anything better, or a doctor said, I can't approve you for this treatment because I don't think that it's going to be helpful for you. I mean, Stacy clearly had a very, very serious sex addiction, which is not a minor thing. Like, she was putting herself into very serious situations where it's like, you could, especially as a trans woman, it's like, I know you're in the gay community, but like, you know, you're putting yourself you're meeting up with groups of anonymous men that you've met online. It's like, how do you know that they're not gonna like beat the shit out of you because you're trans, you know, putting pictures of yourself all over the internet and stuff. It's like, she was just putting herself in very, very dangerous situations with very little regard for her safety. And it's like, I don't think that someone like that would necessarily be approved for something as heavy duty as, you know, gender reassignment. So yeah, that's what I think, you know, and that doesn't mean that there aren't trans people out there, and it doesn't mean that their gender dysphoria isn't real. It just means that it's become so heavily politicized that I think it's made everything a huge fucking mess. It's made doctors feel like they have to diagnose people with something that they don't have, or put them through hormone treatments or surgeries. I mean, some of these detransition stories, it's like they've had surgeries and they're like horrified by what has happened to them. They can't believe it. And they've done things to themselves that are completely irreversible. It's devastating. It's really devastating. And even detransitioning, like, they feel ashamed. They feel like they've let down the trans community. They've let down the gay community. And they shouldn't have to feel that way. But it's because it's, like I said, it's become politicized to the point of hysteria, where everything is just a mess, where it's like gender dysphoria isn't being considered a condition. And it's not being, and it's like, well, then how, for fuck's sakes, like, that legitimized it. That actually made people like go, okay, yeah, this is a medical thing. It's important that these people get, you know, that they transition, that it's good for them. They need they need this help. And it was also an understanding because gender dysphoria has the highest suicide rate of any condition. 40%. Like, that's staggering. That's staggering. That is frightening. And that's even after transitioning. So it's, I mean, people say things nowadays that I find really, really strange, which is like, they'll say things like, well, there's no biological difference between sexes. I don't know how anyone could say that with a straight face. It's like, well, then why would anybody transition? Like, people who say that they're on the side of trans people will say there's no biological difference between sexes. Then why would anyone transition? And if that's true, how come human beings can't mate by themselves? How come we're not hermaphroditic like worms? Right? Like, in order to mate, you need to have two separate people who are have different chromosomal expressions, who have different reproductive organs, who produce, you know, different reproductive cells. That's how procreation happens. So if there's no biological difference, then why would two very separate types of human being need to seek one another out in order to procreate? It just doesn't make any sense. And like I said, it negates the whole trans community, because it's like, well, then what are they going for? What are they going through? You're just throwing that away and going, well, it doesn't matter because there's no difference. I don't know. It's a bummer. It's a bummer that people can't have like normal conversations about it. They get very upset. And it's like, I wish we could talk about it in a rational, sane, scientific manner that's compassionate. I don't know why that's so challenging to do. So Larry wanted to be Larry, but Larry was sometimes Stacy still very promiscuous, like blowing guys at the gas station and stuff like that. Real crazy shit. And like, Stacy also had a mistress, like a mistress other than me. I was just the phone mistress. So he had a real life mistress, and this, he, you know, he dressed up for the mistress, like was in the Stacy persona. And it was strange because Larry seemed just as needy as ever. And I don't know if he was ever at peace with himself. I'm not sure. It's hard to say. There's a lot of things about Larry's life that I'm not too sure of. But anyways, one time Larry was saying to me, he was kind of gushing and being like, I would do anything for you. I would do anything you say, mistress. And I was like, well, I would never make you do something that you don't want to do. I mean, that's the point of BDSM, is that you're both enjoying yourself. It's not about forcing someone to do something against their will. And he said, oh, no, I would do anything for you. I'd do anything. I'd even fuck a dog. And I was like, what? I would never make you do something like that. That would be awful. Like, are you kidding? You know I would never make you. I said, I would never make you do anything you don't want to do. And I certainly would never make you do something like that. And then he was like, well, I have done it. And I was like, you have? When? And he explained that he was with his mistress, and I guess he was hanging out with his mistress, and was dressed up in the Stacy persona, and some of his mistress friends were there. There was like five people, and one of them had a dog, and they were picking on Stacy. I pictured what the scenario is. I think Stacy, I think this dom is obviously a fucking Fruit Loop and totally nuts. And I think Stacy hangs around with her and her friends, and he's kind of a novelty object to them. They probably, you know, they pick on him and they make fun of him, and he just laps up the attention, you know. But they're obviously not nice people. And he said that they kind of like pick on him and stuff and make fun of her and all this shit. And they were kind of pushing her. They're like, you know, to blow this dog or something. And she was like, no, I don't want to do that. Ha ha ha. Like, thought they were just kidding. But then they started being really pushy, and they started kind of being intimidating, like physically intimidating. And like, his dom was ordering him to do it. And he was like, I don't want to. And he said that he ended up doing it. And I was like, well, did you enjoy it? And he admitted, no, he didn't enjoy it at all. He actually cried he was crying. He was begging them not to do it. He said, at first I just started to do it because I thought that it would get them off my back. But then they started to threaten him. They started saying horrible things, and he got scared and felt like he had to do it. So he did. I mean, I understand, because it's like, there's like, what, fucking 5 people, and they're threatening you and they're pushing you to do it. Like, what, you're going to get up and beat them all up? Like, you're completely outnumbered, and these people are obviously demonstrating that they're nuts. So it's like, sometimes in these situations, it's like, even though it's awful, people will just do these things because it's like, well, it's this or I'm going to get my ass kicked, or I'm going to get, who knows what could have happened? These people are lunatics. And I said, and you didn't like it? And he said, no, I didn't like it at all. I hated it. And I said, that's really fucking awful. Not that you did anything wrong. It's what they did, you know? Like, that's really, really awful. And I mean, that's straight up. That's all kinds of fucking criminal action. That's sexual assault. That's animal abuse, bestiality, forcible confinement. I think it's even aggravated sexual assault. The uttering threats to somebody. God knows what else. Like, this is a fucking hideous sexual assault that these people performed upon Larry. And yeah, Larry's kind of fucked up. And in some ways that makes that I would think you would have to like take that into account and like not just make him do anything for your own sick amusement. I mean, these people need help, but they certainly don't deserve it. And, like, that's just not fucking funny. You know, I like a lot of fucked up stuff, but that's fucking sick. That's fucking disgusting. It made me really angry. It still makes me angry, because it's just like, don't do that to, like, okay, yeah, Larry's annoying, and Larry's clingy. Larry doesn't deserve to be hurt. In fact, Larry deserves to be not hurt. And because clearly something's wrong. Clearly Larry has a hard time. Clearly, like, Larry has told me before that he said one time I walked home and it was raining and I saw this couple standing outside in the night and it was just drizzling and they were kissing in the rain. And he said that he went home and cried himself to sleep. And he said he's cried himself to sleep before thinking about wanting to be with someone. Like, he's not just, like, the whore thing is just him wanting attention and not knowing how to get it and not thinking he's good enough and not knowing himself enough. And so he started being this other person. And I've talked to guys before who sometimes, like, they don't know how to manage the alter ego and themselves. They get lost in it. They feel like it takes over their life, and it pushes them into scenarios that are dangerous and fucked up, and they can't, you know, because it's like, well, if I'm not myself, then I can do anything. You know, when I'm Stacy, I can do anything. And, you know, and then you end up, sometimes really, really awful things happen because you're not yourself. It's someone else that's doing it. There's obviously a huge disconnect and a huge dissociation thing happening. And I've seen it before with guys who have these personas, this feminization. Like, sometimes it's a really joyous, awesome thing, and sometimes it gets really out of control, and they find themselves doing things and getting, like, that are just fucked up and dangerous. Like, you know, because it isn't them, it's their secret life. But the secret life becomes too much of a secret because all this fucked up shit is happening and no one would know it. And like, Larry works like a normal office job, like boring ass office job that he's had for a long time, you know, lives alone in a condo, and it's like, you know, kind of is just a normal person who's just an insecure gay guy. And it's like, well, when he's Stacy, it's like, I think he forgets himself, you know. He becomes this like sex pot and just over the top. So, I mean, when he told me this, I mean, as someone who is a fellow sexual assault survivor, it's like, you know, when you tell people the shit that you've been through, it's really important what the other person says. Because a lot of times when you share this shit, I mean, it's painful, it's hard, and saying it is difficult and challenging. And it's like, you gotta say the right thing in response to someone opening up to you in that way. And a lot, and the worst thing you can say is, I don't know what to say. Because then that makes it about you. It makes it about the other person. It makes it, oh, I'm sorry, now I made you uncomfortable by telling you about something traumatic that happened to me that, like, has greatly affected my life and is not my fault. When you go, I don't know what to say, it's like, oh, fuck, like, I feel bad now. I feel bad because I put you on the spot. But this didn't happen, and you make it about yourself, and it's like, it didn't happen to you. You're just hearing it. It happened to me. I'm the one who experienced it. So don't make it about you. Make it about me sharing something with you. And this may be strengthening our relationship, our bond. Like, it's a gift. It might be shitty, but it's a gift. I'm not lying to you. I'm not pretending that, like, things have been fine in my life. I'm opening up to you about something really dark and fucked up. And, you know, to go, I don't know what to say, or, like, say something stupid. It's like, I get that it's an awkward moment, maybe. It doesn't have to be. The only thing you need to say to someone when they go, oh my God, like, you know, when they tell you that, talk about sexual assault, I'm sorry that that happened to you. I'm sorry that that happened to you. That's awful. Like, it's, you know, express condolences that they went through this shit. Same thing that happens when they, you know, someone loses a loved one or, you know, goes through whatever. I'm sorry that happened to you. That shouldn't have happened to you. That's awful what they did. That's just so wrong and disgusting and horrible. And I'm so sorry you went through that. And that has nothing to do with who you are as a person. They're the ones that are disgusting because they're the ones who did it. They're the ones who pushed you to do it. But you're not disgusting because that happened. They're disgusting for putting it on you. You know, you don't have to feel bad that you did that this happened to you. Because it's not your fucking fault. These people are the sick ones. You can recover from this. They can't. I don't know how they can recover from, like, assaulting someone like that. It's so egregious. And it's also animal abuse. And it's also just, like, destroying their own souls. It's fucked. That's wrong. Like, that's, like, you know, there's been people who I've told my shit to, and they've been like, I would kill that person. I would fucking not hesitate. And that's what I told him. I'm like, I would fucking kick that woman's ass. I would beat the shit out of her. I would. I'd fucking cave her head in. Stupid bitch. Doing that to people. And he was delighted by this. He was delighted by my anger. And he's like, you would? And I was like, yes, of course. That is fucking wrong. And I was like, have you seen her since then? And he said, no, I've been avoiding her. She's been trying to call me, contact me. But I've been avoiding her. I'm like, okay, I'm going to pull rank as your mistress, your other mistress. And I'm going to get you to fucking erase this bitch's number. Like, block her shit. Never talk to her again. It's an order. It's a strict order. Get rid of every piece of everything that you can communicate. Like, delete her number. Block her number. Whatever you got to do. Don't ever communicate with her or her fucking cronies ever again. Social media, if, you know, you're following her, unfollow, block her. Block that bitch. Don't unfollow, block. Bye. Dead to me, whore. And just ignore her. I'm like, she might figure out, because you not saying anything to her, it's like, well, you figure it out, bitch. You figure out why I'm not talking to you. She knows she did something wrong. I don't know if she feels bad about it, but she keeps trying to get in touch with Larry, despite what she did. I mean, how could you not know that was wrong? A grown man was crying in front of you while you were making him do something that's, like, stomach turning. You sack of shit, bitch. So I was like, just do not talk to her. Never, 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 never again. I'm like, if she harasses you, like, if she tries to change numbers, I'm like, then you can decide if you want to threaten her with legal action. But, you know, just ignore her, and she will fucking figure that shit out. Let her know, like, let your silence be the answer. Because it's a silence, ignoring people, is the highest form of contempt, as they say in France. And French people know about contempt. That's for fucking sure. And, yeah, I found it, it was just horrifying to me. And I was like, I'm pulling rank, and I'm telling you that this is wrong. and I want, you know, I want you. And I said, do it right now. Like, do it when I'm on the phone with you. And he did. And I was like, yeah, let your silence be, because when, you know, when you can't get a hold of someone and they're, you know, you kind of know something's wrong or you did something stupid, it's like, maybe she'll figure it out. Maybe she'll realize it. I mean, if anything, it's like, you don't owe that bitch another penny because he was paying her to be his dom. Like, that's fucking ridiculous. And then he asked me if he could, like, jerk off. And I was like, well, yeah, of course, because it makes you feel better. And so I gave him permission to spray his jizz all over his like, fucking window in his freaking apartment and lick it off. Because I knew it was, you know, that's a thing he really enjoys doing. So I'm like, you know, it's like getting someone ice cream after something bad happens to them or something. It's the least you can do. It's the least you can do. I wasn't sure if I was going to mention this one particular thing, but it's not necessarily anything to do with the phone sex line. But I mean, I've, you know, mentioned a couple times now about being sexually assaulted and going through domestic violence and that sort of shit. And my ex-boyfriend used to, like, make me watch bestiality porn. And it's like, how does someone do that? The first time it happened, he was, like, sitting. It was in the morning. We didn't live together, but I was at his place a lot. And, you know, brewing coffee and having cereal and the radio's on or whatever. You know, just nice, idyllic morning. And he was like, hey, come over here. I want to show you something. He was sitting in front of his computer, and I sat on his lap. And I was thinking, oh, what? You know, like, oh, some funny video or something. And so he presses the space bar, and the video springs to life, and it is a fucking, it's a woman being fucked by a dog. And, like, I make, you know, I make jokes about Mr. Hands and all that stuff, but, like, genuinely, I'd never really seen anything like that before. I really hadn't seen bestiality porn. I don't like that stuff. I don't want to see it. I might make jokes about it, but I don't want to see it. It's not my bag. I don't like gore videos. I don't like videos of people being hurt. I don't like, you know, some people are really into that shit. And I have to say, like, I've been in two abusive relationships, which embarrasses me because it's like, it just makes me feel like a dumb bitch, which I know I shouldn't feel that way, but I feel that way. I don't feel that way about other people who've been in multiple abusive relationships because I understand the pattern and stuff and how you have to break it, but it just makes me feel bad. And the one thing that both the guys had in common is that they both liked to watch gore videos. Like ISIS beheading videos and Mexican cartel torture videos and shit like that. Like, just casually watching that shit. I don't understand that because, like, I love horror movies, but I love knowing that it's not real. I love fake movie violence. You know, I'm a twisted bitch, but, like, I don't want to see that stuff. Like, there are police officers who have to watch that crap to solve crimes, and they're part of the process of solving the crimes, and they get traumatized by the shit they have to see. They end up with PTSD. They end up drug and alcohol issues and shit like this, depression, taking it out on their families. Like, they get shattered from it, and I just think there's something really fucked up about sitting and watching, you know, the last moments, the last agonizing moments of someone's life, or watching someone be tortured or raped or whatever, and just, like, watching it out of idle entertainment. You know, you can make 1,000 excuses as to why you're watching it, but at the end of the day, it's like, I think it's like psychological cutting. How much can you endure? You don't have to watch it, but you're choosing it. I'm a very curious person. I'm absurdly curious, but even I don't go that far. So, anyways, this video springs up, and I'm like, oh my god, no, I don't want to see this, And I was trying to get away, and he kept grabbing me and putting me back on his lap. And I kept trying to get away, and he would wrap his arm around me. And, like, you know, I'm a spinner, and, like, he was a professional athlete, you know? So, who was, like, a sociopath with anger issues. So I kept trying to get away, and he kept pulling me onto his lap, and then finally he just fucking put me in essentially a submission hold. Like, I kept trying to turn my head and cover my eyes, and he, like, slid one arm across my back and held both of my arms together behind my back, and then slid his other arm up underneath my neck So I was in essentially like a chokehold, like a submission hold, full Nelson type situation where I was like on my knees and he was like forcing my face towards the camera. And he was laughing, like hysterically. It's fucked up because it's fucked up. And that was the first time he did it. But then he would do it at other times too, where he would just like hold me down and like make me watch all these awful videos, like things that he knew I was upset would make me super fucking upset. And, I resent him for that because I would never have watched that shit on my own. And he like put something in my brain that I don't want in there. And I can't take it back. It's so terrible. And actually, I wrote a short film during lockdown that was about my relationship. And I actually included like that part in it, which, you know, I'd never really told anybody because I felt very ashamed. I felt very embarrassed. Like, yeah, I make jokes about it. But then when you're actually like being forced to watch this, and it's clear, you know, from the videos that these people are like, this woman in the dog video, it's like she had one of those faces that's just like, she's clearly a drug addict and she doesn't want to do this. Like, she didn't seem happy. She seemed like she was just doing it. And like later on, a friend of mine sort of said like, yeah, sometimes drug dealers like make women do that if they have like drug debts and shit like this. Which is just so heinous. It's just so awful. But anyways, I wrote this script, and I'm not going to film it because it's honestly not very good. But when lockdown happened, I realized, you know, there's so many people who are now trapped with the people that have been abusing them. And I'm tremendously lucky that I'm not in those situations anymore. You know, like, I feel intense gratitude for that. And I just, to realize that people are trapped in these situations, I realized that I'd been, you know, saved from that fate. And, you know, at the time, my heartache from losing both these guys was, like, incredibly immense. And I feel guilty for others who experienced that, because no one deserves that. And with the ex that would show me the bestiality porn, like, I never saw him laugh as hard as when he did when people were hurt. I was always trying to make him happy, make him laugh. It was like I was trying to find the human in him, trying to see if he was capable of expressing joy that didn't come from other people's pain. It was such a relief to see him smile at small, simple things. And I remember one time, like, I went to get him coffee, and I don't know what it was, but I got this free cookie, and it was like a polar bear. And I was like, look, you got a cookie. And I was like, name him. And he named him Podunk. Podunk the polar bear. And like, we just like put him on display by the microwave all day and kept sort of like a little, I don't know, little shaman, like a little altar or something like that. I kept referring to him. He's like a little talisman. It's weird, you know, he would say to me that I was the human in him. I brought out the human in him. And I brought out, like, the good in him and stuff like that. And it's, like, seeing that sort of thing in him, like, expressed in him, was a relief. It was, like, I could see a salvation in him, redemption. It made me think that, you know, it was just a phase. And that he was a better man. And that, like, I could love both these guys to becoming better men. Which is such bullshit. It's so stupid. Don't fall for that shit. You know, don't fall for it. Don't fall for any of that crap. You know, don't. It's taken me a long time to be able to say, like, no, I want to be happy. And, like, I want to not put up with that shit. And never have that in my life ever again. And realize that I had that stuff in my life because I thought I didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve good things. I deserved bad things. So, I don't know. I think it's important to share traumatic shit because someone out there has experienced it as well. And it's, you know, it really and truly is not your fault if someone else has done it to you. I mean, the thing about being a survivor is you can move on. You know, you don't have the burden of having done something horrible to somebody else. You had something horrible done to you. And now you can move on and give yourself the life that you deserve. A little bit cheesy, I guess. I don't care. Anyways, thank you for joining me for this episode. I very much appreciate it. Yes, so if you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm at I'm Deep Throat Podcast on Instagram. Check out my friend's podcast, Erin Pym. I've mentioned her before. She has a podcast you can also find on fucking Instagram. Bedpost Podcast. She's delightful. She's a professional dom. She is celebrating her 300th episode. I'm floored. That's Sparta, baby. I've been on her show several times. I think her 300 show, she posted that she was going to have like a bunch of like greatest hits. I hope I'm in there. I mean, if I'm not, it's okay. It's a lot of episodes, but I hope I am. You can listen to my episodes. You can listen to any number of episodes. She always has really cool people on. It's about sex and sexuality. She's awesome. If you like the theme song, Tripper Gore. Tripper Gore Music at Instagram. My friend, my new American friend, Doug McDonald, has a fucking podcast. And it is called My Views Are My Own. I've also been on that podcast. Check that out on Instagram. He has a lot of interesting people, including myself, I guess, on his podcast. Check it out. It's awesome. If anyone would like to contribute to the show monetarily, that is greatly appreciated. You can find links to do that in the podcast description. One of the ways you can donate is through PayPal. I have a PayPal account, PayPal.me/I'mDeepThroat. But you can find other methods in the description. Thank you. I will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. Yeah, holy shit. It'll be the lucky number 13. Yeah, dope as shit. So thank you so much again. This is your hero and your whore, Leah, and talk to you soon. So you think about women like fucking, like sucking the horse off.
Yeah.
And do you think about like the horse mounting her and like fucking her?
Yeah, kinda. You know, it wouldn't be like a regular horse. They'd probably have to have a special piece of equipment for her to lay back and get up under and with.
Well, have you ever heard of Catherine the Great?
No, I don't know.
Catherine the Great? Well, she was Empress of Russia at one point, and there was a rumor that she used to fuck her horses, and that's how she died, is that she had a special harness made for, the horses to fuck her so that she would like kind of get underneath the horse and then it would like hold her in place while the horse fucked her.
Yeah,
so that was always a rumor that she fucked her horses, although some people say that it was just like a rumor that like people started to try to disgrace her, but she's kind of gone down in history as like a big horse fucker, for better or worse.
I've often thought about it, though. I've seen, when I breed horses, but I've often thought about, you know, a woman fucking a horse, too.
Do you watch videos of that, of women fucking horses?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Can you get them on regular porn sites, or do you have to go someplace special?
I don't know how you'd find it.
But you watch them, right? You just said that?
No, I've never watched it. I've thought about it.
Oh, I thought you watched, like, porn videos of, like, women fucking horses.
No, I've never watched it. I didn't, like I say, I don't even know that a woman could take it. Because a horse is such a big cock.
Yeah, but I think I've heard of women fucking, like, miniature stallions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could suck off a horse, definitely, or jerk it off. Have you ever heard of Mr. Hands?
No, never heard of that.
Well, he's a guy who used to go to, him and his friends, they used to go to a farm and fuck farm animals, and they would film themselves fucking the farm animals. I guess they paid the farmer to fuck the animals, kind of like a farm brothel, and he actually died because he let a horse fuck him in the ass, and it perforated his colon, and you can actually find a video of it online. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I didn't know what it would actually be something that a woman could do if she took such a big cock.
Well, it could be very dangerous, for sure. I mean, he died getting a horse dick in him, and they didn't even get the whole dick in there. I mean, you can't, really. It would come out your mouth.
Yeah, you could probably just put the head of it in or something.
Yeah. You could just tip the dick.
Yeah. A horse is different than a man. A man, if he gets aroused, his dick gets hard and really gets as big as it gets when it goes in. And then after you come and get off, your dick could go down. You know, a man's cock could go down.
Yeah, I've had sex before. I know what you mean. I know.
Saying,
roughly how dick works.
I'm not saying that. What I'm just trying to explain, a man, he has sex and he loses his erection. Well, a horse does right opposite that. When he has sex with another horse, his cock actually gets big when it comes out. His head swells, and it's really big.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So, like, the horse dick head gets so big that it's, like, hard to even put that inside somebody.
Right. It's just like a dog, a dog gets a knot on his bone. He grows a knot on his pecker whenever he fucks. I know you said you've never done it, so you wouldn't know, but...
I've seen dogs fuck, and I've seen bestiality porn. I mean, I know kind of how dogs' fucking wiener works, a little bit. I mean...
I just always... That's just a fantasy I have.
Right, but is that like your number one fantasy?
Yeah, pretty much. I would love to have sex with more than one woman, for myself. I've never done that.
Oh, that's another fantasy of yours. Well, I think that having sex with more than one woman would almost be like having sex with, like, one horse, depending on the women.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like if you had, like, a bunch of women, the strength of the women together could, like, equal the force of, like, a one stallion. I think that's how it works, like with physics and I don't know if you're into that sort of laws of physics and things, but yeah, you are. Have you ever told any women that you're into horse fucking other than me? Hello? Are you there? Hey? Hello?
This thing on mute.
Hey, buddy. Pal, friend, oh, shitty, padre.
Press 1 to log off and not take any more calls.